creators love your work. On this show, we help you make it as a creative. I'm David Cadavy. If you want to join us here on Love Your Work every Thursday, please hit subscribe on your podcast app and sign up for the Love Mondays newsletter. I've studied history's greatest creatives, and each Monday I share with you the very best lessons I've learned. It's a 2-minute-a-week commitment, and it is free. Sign up at cadavy.net/Mondays. Over the past 4 years, I've been trying to make it as a creator. Yes, I was on my own for another 8 years before that, but this past 4 years has been when I really doubled down on creating to make the things that I create not just some marketing tactic for some other thing, but for the creations themselves to be the thing. And each month for the past 2 years of this journey, I've been reporting my income on my blog, cadavy.net. Now, sometimes it's been pretty embarrassing. These are not your usual income reports where somebody reports making 6 or 7 figures in a single month. These are the income reports of a creator struggling to make it. So this week, I would like to give you a preview. This is a preview of something you get at some levels of Patreon backing. You get an audio version of my income report delivered right to your favorite podcast app through your own private RSS feed. If you're somebody who is also trying to build a business, I think that you'll find my insights useful in understanding how to make your own decisions, because these income reports are where I think out loud about why I do one thing or why I don't do another thing. You get to hear how I build this business, hear the exact thinking behind my decision-making as it happens. So I'm going to share with you the income report for August of this year. By the time you hear this, the income report for September will also be out. So if you'd like to hear it, just go to patreon.com/cadavy and look for the proper backing level. I would appreciate your support so much. Again, that's at patreon.com/cadavy. Okay, here is the report. Hello, Patreon supporters. It is me, and I want to thank you as always so much for your support. The show really would not be possible without you. You're pretty much covering all of the production costs of the show. And we have been light on sponsors lately. And so really, it means a lot that that you are contributing and making this possible. This is the income report for August 2019. And it is an interesting one for sure, because I'm going to be reporting the highest revenues ever. But there's a twist. Okay, so August revenues were $10,406.47, up from July's $6,481.57. Profits were $3,442.10, pretty modest, up from July's $1,609.65. So at least it's better than July. High revenue, mediocre profit, as you might notice from those numbers. This was the highest revenue month since I started reporting income almost 2 years ago. It was also the highest income month ever in terms of book sales, sold the most book sale revenue ever by quite a bit. The previous high was $4,097.76, and that was last August. And this August was $7,015.36. Now, it's interesting that both of these highs were in August. Not sure if there's a pattern there. I can't imagine why there would be a lot of book sales in August over any other month. As you can see, my self-published book income had a hockey stick growth trajectory for the past 2 months. And if you look at the actual blog post on cadavy.net, you'll see it jumps from book income being around, I don't know, 2,200 to just being up around 7,000 just over the last couple of months. So there has been this sharp increase in revenue, but it was merely a slightly higher than average profit month, which begs the question, how much margin do you want versus how many sales do you want? Even though most self-published authors, say those on the Reddit self-publish community, they are aghast at the idea of spending $6,000 on ads to make less than $1,000 in profit. And I still feel okay about it though. Think about it this way, which would you rather have? In February, I made $2,427.63 on self-published books. Ad spend was $1,429.58. I made 70% ROI for a $998.05 profit. Now, this month, August, I made $7,015.36 on self-published books. I spent $6,177.97 on ads. I had a roughly 13% ROI and $837.39 in profit. Now, let's pretend just for a moment that this month's profit was the exact same as February's. So which would be better? Would I rather make $900 profit on $1,500 ad spend? Or would I rather make $900 profit on $6,000 ad spend? It's a question worth asking. Consider that in February, I sold 263 copies of The Heart to Start. In August, I sold not 263 copies, I sold 956 copies of The Heart to Start. Now, which one is better? I would still rather have the second month, the one with more revenue, more ad spend, and equal profit. Why? Because in the second month, I sold more books. This would be a no-brainer if I had more of a solid back-end business, that is, if my book helped sell some kind of high-dollar course or consulting. But it's still better to sell more books, in my mind. More books sold means more influence. I think a lot of the extra returns are yet to be seen, that they're going to be delayed. Now, it does make me wonder, couldn't I have just priced my book at 99 cents and sold just as many, if not more, books with way less ad spend? But then again, that would be different. Now, I posit that somebody who buys a book for a dollar is a different kind of person from a person who buys a book for $10. Even if the person buys a book at 99 cents, in some alternate universe, I bet that that person takes the purchase less seriously. On average, they don't make it a priority to read. They don't take action. And judging by the experiences people are sharing in the reviews on Amazon, I think the book is worth at least $9.99. It doesn't feel fair to only get 99 cents for the book, in fact, even if it takes some ad spend in order to make that sale. Now, I have to admit, it does feel a bit wrong that Amazon gets that extra money and that that money has to come out of the pocket of the customer. But as Seth Godin told me about Amazon being paid for play, he said, publishing has always been really expensive. It's just the authors didn't know that. Now, one final reason I prefer the high revenue, high spend month is that it means more credit card points, interestingly enough. And since my mother died recently, I need those airline miles for more frequent trips back and forth between Medellin and Phoenix. Now, remember, I earn 3x points per dollar on spend on advertising. So August $6,000 in advertising alone earned me more than 18,000 points. And I already transferred those points to United, and I booked a flight to Phoenix for only 20,000 points. So I basically got a free flight out of the month, retail value around $700 or so. Now, if you're interested in earning 3x points on your ad spend in your business, check out katavi.net/3xpoints, and you will see the card that I earned that from. Now, this level of ad spend is not for the faint of heart. It does cause some cash flow issues. I pay for the ads up front. Amazon doesn't pay me until roughly 90 days after the sale, so I'm sure to have some cash as financial padding as I ramp up ad spend. Now, interestingly, this ballooning ad spend seems to be correlating with increased attention through various channels. More ad spend is equaling more influence. I'm noticing an uptick in people inviting me to be on their podcast or as part of their online summit. The uptick in sales isn't isolated only to Amazon either. There are more people checking out my book on Scribd or at their library through Overdrive. Now, it's little surprise that awareness of The Heart to Start and my work would be growing, because at this level of ad spend, The Heart to Start is getting more than 9 million more impressions in a month than it would otherwise. So that's 9 million more times that it's showing up in front of people's eyeballs than it would be if I was spending nothing on ads at all. I've had many friends and readers report seeing the book advertised on their Kindles, for example. I mean, they used to tell me about it, but now it just kind of comes up casually in conversations. It's like assumed that they see my book on their Kindles all the time. Now, even if I make very little profit on this ad spend, I think overall it's very interesting to see the effect that it has. The Amazon Hard to Start paperback subtitle is updated. I started changing the subtitle of the Hard to Start back in January, and now the process is complete. As I reported before, Amazon doesn't allow authors to change the subtitles on their paperbacks without starting over with a new ISBN. Now, this is despite the fact that Bacher, who is the authority who distributes ISBNs, does not have such a restriction. There is no such thing. But after I talked to Amazon, I did discover that they do have actually a good reason for this. So, for example, someone could change their book subtitle from SAT Preparation 2018 to SAT Preparation 2019, and then everybody who bought used copies in circulation would end up getting the old version of the book. Now, I then decided to set out to distribute on Amazon through Ingram Spark instead of through KDP Print. But in talking to Ingram Spark, they said that Amazon got their data about the subtitle from Ingram's data feed. Well, I had already changed the subtitle on Ingram Spark. Ingram Spark is what I use to distribute everywhere outside of Amazon, the paperback. So, you know, if you go to your local bookstore, you can probably order The Hard to Start, for example. So I had Ingram look into whether they could update Amazon, or actually they offered to. So in the meantime, I simply changed the subtitle on my print files for the cover and the interior. So even if it had the old subtitle on the Amazon page, the new subtitle would be on the actual book that people would receive. So after more than 2 months, eventually, the subtitle finally did change on the Amazon page for the paperback of The Hard to Start. Now, the book still has the old subtitle on my KDP dashboard where I view my reporting. But as far as customers are concerned, they only see the new subtitle. And it was a long process, but this new subtitle feels a lot better. I still can't say for sure that it's improving my sales. I mean, I'm able to sell more books, but by buying more ads, and I'm still turning about the same profit. Hard to know if that's because my ad strategy has changed, the market has changed, or if the book is gaining legs in some way. I mean, it does have 216 reviews, a 5-star graphic. That all has to be worth something. I'm glad to finally have the subtitle changed across all versions. It has been an interesting learning experience. It's really one of those wacky adventures that you come across navigating this self-publishing jungle. And it is a jungle. It's very confusing sometimes. And it's incredible how complicated some of these different pieces can be. Papyrus book and article finally released. After more than a year of off and on work, I finally debuted the silly Papyrus article I had been working on. In defense of Papyrus, why Avatar uses the world's second most hated font to signal the downfall of civilization. It is almost 6,000 words long. It is totally ridiculous, but I do think it's some of the best writing that I have done to date. I think this is a case where this unique voice that I found in breaking down design concepts, it merged with the better writing chops that I've developed in the 9 years since writing Design for Hackers. Some of the practice I've had in making wider social commentary also got wrapped up into this article too. I think the result is a lot of fun. The article has done really well on Reddit. It seems though that design commentary doesn't really have the wide appeal that it did when I wrote the first posts that got me the Design for Hackers book deal. The article really fell flat on Hacker News and Designer News, for example. But other than those two channels and sharing it to the D4H email list, I really did not do a ton to promote this article. And it's actually been fun to watch how it has grown organically and gotten attention on its own, such as with the Reddit posting and submission to Web Designer News, both with which I had nothing to do at all. After working out some of the kinks in the article, I also published my Papyrus article as an ebook. This time I went wide from the start, publishing on all outlets through PublishDrive, though I did actually just pull the Amazon portion of that so I can go direct and I can buy ads for the book. I'm still waiting for the book to go live in all the stores. Heart to Start Kobo ratings transferred from draft to digital version. I'm now publishing the Heart to Start directly to Kobo, and the ratings I accrued while publishing through draft to digital. Again, draft to digital is a distributor that distributes to many stores, and I am still doing that for many stores, but now I'm publishing directly to Kobo, and the ratings that I gained while going through draft to digital, those are now transferred to my directly published Kobo version. And this whole process took more than a month to get those ratings transferred. So if you plan on pulling a book from a distributor to publish direct with Kobo, do plan accordingly. How to Write a Book is published direct to Kobo, and I've experimented with pricing promotions. Now that The Heart to Start is eligible for such promotions, I am looking forward to trying it out, which reminds me that in the midst of all the chaos, I forgot to report the results of my first Kobo promotion. In July, I did a free promotion of How to Write a Book, which cost me $5. I ended up giving away around 180 copies, and I made $3.49 in revenue. So that promotion appears to have been a loss of about $1.51. And I don't know whether that led to any other sales. Anyway, we will see what happens if I get an HTS promotion accepted for The Heart to Start. However, Kobo has already rejected an offer to do a promotion for 50% off. So we will see whether they end up accepting it for promotions. I'm considering reclaiming audiobook rights to The Heart to Start. The thing is that I distribute through ACX, which distributes to Audible and Apple, and I have a 40% royalty. But to get that 40% royalty, you have to agree to a 7-year exclusivity agreement. But I have heard you can get your rights back if you did all the production yourself. If you aren't beholden to deliver royalties to a third party, you can get out of that contract and pick a different one. So I could put my audiobook on Find a Way Voices, which would distribute to Audible and Apple and many other places. And I believe I would have more control over pricing, probably not on Audible, but as far as I know, I would be able to control pricing. And I could submit deals to BookBub's Chirp, and I would only earn 25% royalty instead of 40% in this case. And I would also miss out on Audible bounties, which earn me $50 a piece for every new customer that I refer to Audible. So it seems like significant loss in income potential up front, but it kind of feels right. I love Amazon. I love the opportunities they provide to authors, but I am going to promote to other channels whenever I get a chance, especially if they're good, especially if I have a good service. You know, like Kobo, for example, they've got a great reading experience. Their sort of e-reader app experience that I've tried on iPad is really good. So I feel good about promoting my books over there. So I'm still thinking this one over. It doesn't make a lot of rational sense from a revenue standpoint, but it's the direction that I want to go in. Now, new vanity URL, kdv.co. I'll start this off in a strange way. Losing a parent is a strange experience because it causes you to do strange things. Now, one of the strange things I did was I gave up not one, but 2 3-letter .co domains. I have written in previous income reports about letting go of a lot of loose ends in the business. You know, sometimes that's killing a microsite, even though it earns a small amount of money passively. Other times it's getting rid of domains that you never did anything with. Like, how many domains do you have sitting around that you had some plans for and then you never did anything with them? So the way I see it is that even if you could get money for it, because that's often the reason why you hold on to those domains, is you think, oh, well, somebody will offer me some money or I'll put it up for sale and I'll sell it. Well, I'm not in the domain dealing business. It is a distraction from my core functions of creating things, and it's just not worth it. So I got a notice from Namecheap that one of my three-letter.co domains had renewed, and that domain would be kdv.co. Now, I had planned to make a URL shortener out of kdv.co, but I never did. I decided that if I hadn't done it already, then I probably never would. So I wrote Namecheap, and I asked for a refund. And they said they would give me a refund, but they warned me that if I changed my mind, I would have to pay about $90 in addition to the $30-some dollars it costs per year to have a .co domain. I would have to pay that $90 to get it back during their sort of grace period they have. And I said, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead and cancel it. I don't want it. And I got my refund. And I also gave away d4h.co, which is another domain that I plan on using to make a URL shortener. I had an acquaintance who once told me that he would really like it for his business. So I just gave it to him. I didn't even sell it. Now, here's the next strange part. And you probably can tell what's coming. One morning, I woke up and I decided that I really badly wanted kdv.co. I figured I could use it for links that people have to type in, such as links that I announce on the podcast, links I put in Instagram posts or on Instagram stories. I just thought, how cool would that be? kdv.co/whatever. Now, how badly did I want it? Badly enough that I went ahead and spent an extra $90 to get it back. And if you listen to my income reports, $90 is a non-trivial amount of money to spend on something that's not clearly going to make a profit. So spending that money wasn't all bad. It at least motivated me to actually do something with the domain. So I used WP Engine's super easy hosting technology. I made a WordPress install. I installed a redirect plugin. And within minutes, I had myself a little URL shortener. And I've been experimenting with it. I've created links and shared them on Instagram. I'm still holding off a bit before sharing the links on audio, though I guess I'm talking about it right now. Since it's so much harder to change, should I decide to drop the URL in the future? But the more I look at it, the more I really like it. It's just so crisp. KDV. If you say it fast enough, it doesn't sound so different from my last name. KDV. Anyway, plus there's that .co extension. That's perfect. It's Columbia's domain extension. And Columbia, that's where I live. So the only things that I'm not sure of is it going to be easy to understand in audio? Because D and V sound very similar. Also, it's interesting that in terms of syllables spoken, kdv.co is actually one syllable longer than saying kdv.net. But in terms of typing it out, it is much easier. If it really sticks, you know, maybe someday I'll change all of kdv.net to kdv.co. The weird world of grief. What does the whole domain thing have to do with losing a parent? It's that I am in transition. I am grasping to find out exactly what kind of person I am now that my mother is no longer alive. It sounds silly in a way. What difference does it make? But it simply does make a difference. And I'm still figuring out what that difference is. So if nothing else, it can be an excuse to make some much needed evaluations about what is important to me. What do I stand for? What do I want to accomplish before I too leave this world? Because I guess that's one thing that you realize when you lose a parent, you are next. I have also noticed that my mind doesn't really function as well in some ways. Sometimes I think this is part of the grieving process. Most moments I feel fine, if not great. But then every once in a while, it just kind of hits me and I find myself in disbelief that I experienced this terrible event. And it feels unfair. Reality feels like a bit of a joke sometimes. I find myself increasingly attracted to absurdism and satire and comedy. And I've even drawn a couple of cartoons. And maybe that's what motivated me to finally finish the Papyrus article, because it's kind of ridiculous and tongue-in-cheek. So it'll be interesting to see how I and my work change over the next year or so. Putting more effort into Instagram. A major factor in deciding to reclaim the kdv.co domain, no doubt, is my newfound interest in Instagram. I've come to realize that I need to revisit my presence online. Look, I mean, I built my first online presence more than 20 years ago in 1996, I built my first web page. I had my big breakthrough in building my audience from about 2010, 2013. And the internet has changed so much during that time. And in a lot of ways, I still do things the old way. So if I had a gigantic audience already, like if I was Seth Godin or Mark Manson, I wouldn't really sweat it too much. It wouldn't be that big of a problem, but I don't. So the channels that I've relied upon in the past, Twitter, email, this blog, they're not growing. Additionally, my podcast downloads remain stagnant. Now, one place where I continue to gain a modest amount of followers is on Instagram. I haven't even been using it that much, and I gain followers, but I think it's simply a growing channel. I haven't put a lot of thought into it lately, so I'm trying to take on kind of a beginner's mindset. I've read a couple of books on Instagram marketing. They've given me a fresh perspective on my own Instagram strategy. I mean, it seems ridiculous that I would even have an Instagram strategy, but I've thought about it at least. Now, I don't want Instagram to become a distraction. I don't have enough of a profit machine going on in my back-end business to justify spending a lot of time on Instagram. If I gain Instagram followers or engagement, I can't easily transform that into money. It's just vanity metrics. But that is not an excuse to not learn. So I'm trying to budget a small amount of time to really think about Instagram. Now, this may have something to do with my scatterbrained mental state as of late. I'm not immune to variable rewards. I easily can fall into scrolling through the feed, examining what I see, well beyond the point of diminishing returns. And it hasn't exactly been uplifting to get on Instagram and see how much fun everybody is having traveling the world. And meanwhile, I'm like trying to climb out of the crater of my mother's sudden death. Now, one experiment is a carousel post on how to write a book. There is a giveaway attached to it, and the length of that giveaway depends upon the number of likes the post gets. It's over on Instagram.com/Katavi. And eventually, it would be nice to have Instagram as kind of a part of my creative systems that I have set up, that the content I create on the podcast would be chopped up in some kind of compelling way for Instagram without too much extra work. And then next, I would like to have more content on YouTube, but I am taking it one step at a time because I'm careful to not spend too much time on a growth channel before that growth has any hope of paying off. Speaking to eighth graders, while I was in Scottsdale, I paid a visit to Copper Ridge Elementary School. A family member teaches an eighth grade honors English composition class there, and the students were on the cusp of beginning a daunting writing assignment, something way more daunting than I ever had to do while I was in eighth grade, which was writing stories according to a hero arc. The teacher shared a sample chapter of The Heart to Start with the class, the chapter being Permission to Suck, and the teacher had to write out a couple of shits in the chapter. There's a couple cuss words in there. It was really cool to see how that chapter resonated with the students and to talk with them about the challenges of writing, especially when your writing doesn't meet up to your own standards. And so it's just interesting to see how that operates even in the eighth grade mind. So I was never good enough at English class to be in the honors class, but I know that I could have used my own advice when I was in school. And that was actually a lot of fun. New iPad keyboard setup again. Last month, I talked about my quest to find the right portable keyboard to go along with my iPad. I wanted something small enough to be portable, but that had an option to plug in instead of being Bluetooth only. And in my last report, I had settled on a dual version keyboard from Jellycomb. I lamented that it had a trackpad that I would probably never use, and that the keyboard layout made it pretty hard to avoid errors. But after some experimentation, I decided that I liked the form factor a lot, that I wanted a keyboard that I could hook up to my iPad and that I could write on reliably, for thousands of words at a time. So I traded in the Jellycomb for this keyboard from Pluggable, and that is at katavi.net/pluggable, PLUGABLE, like a pug, but plugable. I would have thought it would be two G's, but it's not. Anyway, this keyboard is full-sized, and as the brand name would imply, but which does not seem to be true for all of their models, it is plugable. I can plug it into my iPad or my iPhone with a proper adapter. And I find that this form factor is really great for doing some distraction-free writing. I will kind of plan ahead to do a certain block of writing, and I'll go to a cafe with my iPad and this keyboard instead of my laptop. I'm guaranteed to get some good writing done. I'm guaranteed not to be looking at Twitter or Facebook. Those applications are not on my iPad. And I tend to do my writing while not connected to the internet anyway, at least when I begin. And so it's really been a great added weapon to my arsenal. Public service announcement, Scrivener iOS syncing issues. Listen carefully if you use Scrivener, especially if you use Scrivener for iOS or you consider using Scrivener for iOS. So along with the new iPad setup, I bought Scrivener for iOS. Now, I've long loved Scrivener, catavy.net/Scrivener, for desktop, and I was excited to use it on iOS. Now, since I was new to syncing between devices on Scrivener, I was sure to make sure everything was synced before one particular cafe writing session that I went on. I went to the cafe, I had a great session, and while I was at the cafe, I synced through Dropbox. And when I got back to my apartment, I carefully made sure that everything was synced between my laptop and my iPad. But even though Scrivener claimed to be synced, I had different versions of the same document on the two devices. So I tried syncing a couple of different times. And eventually, the new writing from my session in the cafe on my iPad, that new writing vanished. So I tried to go back through old Dropbox versions, and strangely, none of the versions in the records contained my writing. So the writing from my very productive writing session at the cafe was gone forever. Forever. So I posted on Scrivener's forums and explained what had happened. And I was essentially told that I wasn't following the rules of syncing with Scrivener, that you should never work on a document on one device while that same document is open on a different device, because Scrivener is like always open on my laptop. So for this very reason, Scrivener for desktop actually has an auto-close feature. So it closes Scrivener after it's been open for a specified period of time. So yeah, I guess it still doesn't explain why it was that I synced while I was at the cafe and it was apparently synced, but that when I look back through the Dropbox records, it wasn't. I'm not sure what happened there, if I had a bad connection or something. But anyway, the best I can explain it is that Scrivener's syncing is dumb. It doesn't care what the contents of the file are. All that matters is the document on Dropbox newer or older than the one on this device? If it's newer, I'm going to update with that one. So now I understand how it works. I get it. We'll see how it goes in the future. And, you know, these restrictions seem obvious given that Scrivener does sync through Dropbox. I think I'm spoiled from my days of writing code for the web, you know, where you can just merge versions of a file based upon the lines that were changed. Like you can actually go through line by line and see, oh, this line conflicts with that line, and I'll pick this line, and you can pick from the different versions even. But you can't do that on something like Scrivener. I'm also spoiled by Evernote, which has native syncing, which, you know, they've got a way of figuring things out on their own. They're not using Dropbox. So I will not keep Scrivener open on my laptop all the time, which is what I do with Evernote, and I don't have a problem there. It's a bummer because it was always nice to be able to quickly make a note in Scrivener whenever I thought of something. So that was like one of the use cases I was hoping to use the iOS version for, after all, was that I could be out and about, I could think of a thing, I could open up a document that I'm working on, quickly put in some notes, and be confident that everything's synced up. But it sounds like you have to be a little bit more deliberate with it than that. So I wish that Scrivener would make it clearer to their users that they are very different from the sort of state of the art syncing behavior. I think it would help and save people a lot of frustration and lost writing sessions. They have a wonderful tool. I am going to continue to use it, but this is my public service announcement. If you use Scrivener for iOS, be extremely careful with how you sync. Do not leave Scrivener open on your laptop while you're working on it on a different device. So, WP Engine referral. One nice bonus that I got this month was an $850 credit for a WP Engine referral. They share $200 or 100% of the first payment with their affiliates, whichever is higher. Apparently, someone signed up and made an $850 payment on their first payment. So if you are listening, thank you very much for that. This is a reminder that WP Engine does have a very solid affiliate program. If you're in a position where you recommend web hosts to people from time to time, sign up through my affiliate link at katavi.net/WP affiliate. I will get $50 for each person that you refer. And no, it's not going to cut into your earnings one bit. It's not some sort of like pyramid thing. It's just, that's the way they have it set up. If I refer you to the affiliate program, everybody that you refer, I get $50 for each of those people too. Here comes the numbers for the income report. Income again was gross income, $10,406.47. Solid income month. Book sales, The Heart to Start Kindle, $4,799.55. The Heart to Start Paperback, on Amazon at least, $682. The Heart to Start Wide, everywhere that's not Amazon, $75.41. The Heart to Start Audiobook, $155.28. How to Write a Book Kindle, $886.43. How to Write a Book Paperback, $352.64. How to Write a Book Wide or anywhere not Amazon, $0. I don't even know why I'm reporting that, but there is $0. How to Write a Book Audible, $29.33. How to Write a Book Spanish Kindle, $24.34. It's actually a pretty good month for that book. It has been slow going. How to Write a Book Spanish Paperback, $2.64. Make Money Writing on the Steam Blockchain Kindle, $6.92. Make Money Writing on the Steam Blockchain Paperback, $0.00. Make Money Writing on the Steam Blockchain Audible, $0.82. Total book sales, $7,015.36. Digital products, Blog to Bling, $188. Some monthly payments coming in from a push that I did several months ago. D4H Video, $47. White Hot Course, $39. Logo Mastery, $49. Summer of Design, $45. Total digital products, $368. Affiliates and advertising. Active Campaign, $1,339.09 from Active Campaign. Always very glad to have their referral income. That really helps the revenue. Amazon, $94.29. ConvertKit, $70.80. Google AdSense, $180.47. HostGator, $200. SendOwl, $3. WP Engine, $850. Total affiliates, $2,737.65. Love Your Work Podcast, Patreon. That's you people. Thank you so much. $254.31 and PayPal donations, $10. Total Love Your Work Podcast, $264.31. Services, Medium, writing on Medium, I earned $21.15, and that's it for services for this month. Gross income, $10,406.47. Okay, expenses. Total expenses were $6,964.37. Under general, accounting, $235. Outside contractors, $161.16. Podcast editing and publishing, $240, which you Patreon supporters help with. Miscellaneous software, $59.47. Total general expenses, $695.63. Advertising, Amazon, $6,039.31. BookBub, $38.66. Facebook, $20. PrestaZone, which I use to manage the Amazon ads, $80. Total advertising costs, $6,177.97. Hosting, GeniusLink, $10. Libsyn for hosting the podcast, $20. Namecheap, $26. I don't have that that fee in there yet. That'll probably be in the next month. Sendowl, $24. Twilio, $10.77. Total hosting, $90.77. Total expenses, $6,964.37 for a net profit of $3,442.10. And that concludes the August 2019 income report. Again, Patreon supporters, thank you so, so much for your support. It means the world. It really does make this show possible. Is Love Your Work helping you find your unique creative voice? Does it bring you the inspiration and motivation you need to become the creator and human you want to be? If so, please be a part of making this a special and nourishing and thoughtful show. Support the show on Patreon. You'll be an even bigger part of the show than you already are. If you contribute just a coffee a month, you'll be helping support the hosting and production of Love Your Work. Everyone has some unique creative gift to offer the world. Together, we can give people the tools they need to bring that work into the world. The world will be better off for it. Visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/Katavi. This is a different kind of model for supporting the work that you love. The choice is yours. Vote with your dollars, put your money where your mind is, and keep Love Your Work going. Visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/Katavi. As a thank you, you'll get early access, bonus content, and a discount on Love Your Work merchandise. Learn more at patreon.com/Katavi. That's patreon.com/KADAVY. And if you can't support the show financially and you've listened to at least 3 episodes, can you do me a favor? Write a review on Apple Podcasts. You can consider it your donation to help support the show. Love Your Work is brought to you in part by our Patreon supporters, such as mini sponsor Paula Spriggs, and top supporters such as Jeffrey Mason and Vitas Pinkovicius. This has been Love Your Work, and I'm David Katavi. The theme music for this show is At Sea by Durena from the album About Everything and More by arrangement with Deep Elm Records at deepelm.com. Love Your Work is a production of Katavi, Inc.